It's very much an overview type of a thing. Active listening, actually listening to the other person, not thinking about what you're going to say next. One thing we learned was using I statements. So rather than saying you feel this way, you know, trying to interpret what you think they feel or trying to put something on them, it's more of this is how I hear you or I feel. Paying attention to not only your own feelings, but the other person's feelings. That's pretty big, too. And then fighting fair. You're probably always going to come up into some situations where you're going to have some kind of heated debate or argument, but that's not the time to bring up things from, 10 years ago or whatever and start bringing everything in it. Just try to try to make your point. Okay, one of the things that we went to few years into our marriage, we went to a little marriage conference, and they were talking about this thing called speaker-listener techniques. So this was one, replacing how can I get you to shut up and listen to me with what do I do to create a safe place where understanding can take root and grow. So that's kind of the basis for, when you're in an argument, you're in a debate, whatever, you really want a safe place where that person doesn't feel like, well, if I say the wrong thing or if I do something, wrong that I can't, it's going to come back later and haunt me, that kind of thing. You really want a place where you can say, I can say anything. I can respect what you have to say. And hopefully that other person can respect what you have to say. Yeah. Listening and talking with each other and not at each other. That's another, seems like it's such a small word between with and at, but that's a huge difference when you're talking to someone. Okay, and then making a commitment to being healthy and how you work through your differences rather than placing importance on who has the stronger opinion. Trying to be the winner and trying to make the other person the loser. I was really big at that. I wanted to win and all the time. And even when I knew I was wrong, I still was going to hold on to my point because it's like I can't let go of this because I'm the winner in this thing. So knowing that it's not important who wins, who loses, it's more about understanding the other person, and working it through. I'll say now that, going through conferences, that definitely, I think that helps with communicating with a spouse especially. But Lori and I, we got past a lot of that stuff also through praying a lot to God. I think God changed us and changed the way we looked at each other. And I know in the beginning when I would pray to God, my prayer was, Lord God, change her. If she just would change, she just got my point, it would be so much better. God being, a lot more wiser than me, he realized that that's not what was supposed to happen, And over time, my prayer kind of changed and it became more of, okay, change me. And what was amazing about that was, when God was changing me, he was changing her too, and we both kind of changed in the way we interacted with each other. Okay. So one of the things that we learned, and we got this little thing, and this has been, like I said, we've been married 15 years, so this has probably been about 12 years ago, and we still have this. It's a little magnet. It's called the floor, and it looks like a little floor thing, and we've got plenty of them. Thank you, Ryan. To hand out to anybody who wants them, or if you know of anybody who wants one of these, it just is basically a little reminder about how to communicate with someone. We got it in, initially we got it in a marriage, little conference thing, but we haven't used it much lately because we kind of, it started these things, it's kind of something you have to just, it's a skill that you hone over time, and we don't need to use it very often, but we actually started pulling it out for our oldest son, and it actually helped with that too. So what it has, and this is basically what's on this little floor, is rules for both. The speaker has the floor, the speaker shares the floor, and you also don't try to solve a problem. In the very beginning, you're just trying to understand the other person, and you try to stay on topic. Don't go bringing things up from, 10 years ago that has nothing to do with it. And then rules for the speaker, speak for yourself, talk in small bits, stop and let the listener paraphrase. So don't say how you think the other person is feeling, or I think you're like this. It's more of, hey, this is where I'm coming from type of an idea. And then rules for the listener is to paraphrase what you hear. So that's part of the active listening thing. It's like, one person will say something, that other person will say, well, this is what I heard you say. Because it's amazing that when you're communicating with someone, you may think that you're extremely clear in what you're saying, but they hear something completely different. So it's good to have that person say, I'm hearing this, and then if that's not wrong, or if that's not right, you can work that out. Don't rebuke, and then focus on the speaker's message. We've got these little magnets. Feel free to take these. We'll probably hand them out at the end. If you want one, it's great. If you have, like I said, even if you have kids, the nice thing about this is the idea behind it is that if you need to say something, you would grab the floor. And when you have the floor, the other person doesn't talk. And then when the other person wants to talk, then you would hand the floor over to them, and it's their turn to talk, and it's your turn to listen. And it seemed really weird, and when we first heard about it, when we first were going through it, I thought, this is stupid. Honestly, I'm going, this just makes no sense. It's really crazy. But we tried it, and it actually helped. It actually worked. And like I said, even if you have, kids or something like that, the nice thing about it is when you have the floor, and I think this is what our son appreciated, is he was feeling like he wasn't being heard or listened to. And so we would do this with him, and all of a sudden he felt like, oh, I've got the floor now. Now I know people are listening to me. And it seems like a weird thing, but give it a shot. It works. I think that's the end of my
All right, so we're kind of going in a little bit weird order here, but we went with number two first. Now we're going to go back up to number one, at least on divorce.com's website. And I had always heard that finances were kind of the biggest reason why marriages fail. This kind of rang true for me. Like I said, you can go on different websites and you can come up with different lists, but this one seemed to make sense. So the Edgecombs became a family in 1996. My wife is sitting in the back there. So this is our wedding day photo. We thought it would be kind of cool just to put our photos up there. Anyway. Yeah, so I had to scan that in. We didn't have digital photography in 1996, so, and I had to get the book out to figure out how to scan it into my scanner yesterday. But anyway, so we've been married almost 17 years. It'll be 17 years in May, just a couple of months. So finances. Finances can be kind of a touchy subject. I mean, to talk about with your spouse or with your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. And it can be touchy to talk about in church, too. One of the things that kind of makes it touchy is that it's about communication with finances. So it kind of brings in number one and number two together, right? It's oftentimes the lack of communication on finances is bigger than the actual financial problem itself. Having open communication, talking about budgets, talking about what financial problems you're having, that's huge. And a lot of times, if you just talk about it, you can get over the actual problem itself. So keep that in mind, is that, one and two on the list of top 10, those are very much tied together. So we can have financial issues and we can have communication issues, but we need to resolve those so that we can talk about both together. And everybody has financial problems, right? I think no matter where you are in the cycle of life and no matter where you are in income ranges, everybody has financial problems. And my financial problems are going to be different than the Newells and different than the Abrams. But we all come across financial issues every once in a while. But how we deal with those problems can make or break our relationship, right? We can either attack them head on as a couple and communicate well, or we can let it fester and we can let it tear us apart. So doing a little bit of research on this, I found this thing on Focus on the Family. They had some basic principles for financial kind of advice for couples. And the first one was that God owns everything, right? So everything that we have as a family, as people, as a church, it's not ours, right? It's God. So there's this verse 1 Timothy 6:7 says, "We've brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either." And what that means is we're stewards of God's property, and being a steward means we're kind of God's employees, right? He's given us this stuff. And it's not just money, it's houses and cars and our clothes and food. And what we do with it is how we show God that we love him. So keep that in mind as you just think about your finances as a family, that it's not yours. And the decisions that you make with your money are really decisions that we're making for God. Another verse is Matthew 25:23, and it says, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things, and I will put you in charge of many things. So what that tells me is that how we manage the things that God has given us will decide, that will help God decide what more, what else is he going to trust us with, right? So if we do well with our decisions on our finances, we may be blessed by God later and have the ability to manage and have a little bit more financial freedom perhaps later in life. The second basic principle is think ahead and avoid problems. Luke 14:28 says, "Which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it?" So plan ahead. You know, if you have kids that want to go to college, how are we going to take care of college? If you have kids that are going to be driving soon, what are they going to drive? What's the next house look like if there is a next house? And are we going to rent? Are we going to own? You know, what kind of a car do we need? Do we have to have the latest and greatest, or can we get by with a 1988 Mazda 323, right? So that was my car of choice for about 15 years, and it was a great car. And all I needed it to do was get me back and forth to work, and it did that for a long time. Write down family goals, and it kind of goes back to planning. So do your kids want to go to college? Do they want to go to a two-year college, a four-year college? Do you want to downsize your house? Do you want to upgrade your house? You know, think about your jobs and your income and what's the next level you want to get to. And but sitting down and communicating about your goals as a family is something that can help us avoid problems in the future. This next point here, so create and balance and stick to an annual budget. So we can create budgets, but if we don't stick to them and if they're not balanced, right? So a balanced budget means you're spending less than what you're bringing in, right? That means you're balanced. You can go unbalanced and completely tip over the top, and you can be in debt the rest of your life. But budgets are tools that can help us make sure that our finances are in order, and I think that leads to a better marriage. Julie and I started doing a budget about 15, 16 years ago. We've been married for 17, so we've had a budget pretty much the entire time that we've been married, and we still have it today. And we started it, I think, because we had some credit card debt after we got married. Julie basically paid for our wedding. And so we had some debt that we had to take care of. We had a car payment. We had a house payment. So how are we going to plan this whole thing out, and how are we going to work together as a couple? She wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. I was going to be the breadwinner. You know, this is just a couple years out of college, and we just sat down and made it work. And we sit down every year, maybe every 2 years, and we kind of go through our budget, and we look at things and say, hey, we need, you know, sports. So Dalton plays football, and that's expensive. And Maddie used to do gymnastics, and that's expensive. And Gavin's baseball and soccer. And so you take a look at all those things that you want to do as a family, vacations, and you got to pay for your house, and you got to pay for your car, and you have to remember that mortgage insurance comes up twice a year, and that's not cheap. And so creating a budget is something that's pretty simple to do. There's a lot of different tools out there. Dave Ramsey, if you've heard of him, he's got some really good stuff out there, DVDs and books to help couples and just people in general figure out how to manage their money. And he's a brilliant guy. He's kind of got a weird sense about him, but he knows how to manage money for sure. So
for me, when I hear budget, I mean, Jill and I have always struggled with the budget.
Yeah, so I think Julie and I have a really simple approach. We just use a spreadsheet, and it's not Quicken, it's not anything that we bought off the shelf just for our budget. We use Excel, and we just keep track of what we spend on groceries and what we spend on the house and what we spend on sports and allowance, and I get an allowance too, right? Julie gives me money twice a month, and that's what I live off of for the month. But that's how it works, and she has an envelope system in her purse, and when it's gone, it's gone. You know, if we run out of entertainment money the second day of the month, then we're not going to go eat out that month. So we keep it very simple. And I think there's simple methods and there's complex methods. There's software tools out there to help you. Dave Ramsey has the envelope system, and he's got like a hardware package that you can order to keep your envelopes in. And so, and we're happy to talk to people about budgeting. Like I said, Julie and I, we're not experts, but we've done it for long enough that, and we can tell you story after story after story about how Julie goes to the grocery store with her envelope, and she's to the point now where she doesn't count what she has because she knows she's going to have enough. You know, she'll get up to checkout, and the groceries will come to $47.12, and she'll have $47 in her envelope, and then she's got 12 cents laying around. So, I mean, those kind of stories happen time after time after time for us. And it's just proof, I think, that God is aware that we're trying, and he's going to be there to help us. And we still have financial problems just like everybody else, right? We're not immune to it because we have a budget, but the budget helps us. So, yep. And so then there's this thing on borrowing, right? So I think to get a house nowadays, you pretty much have to get a loan. And to buy a car early on in life, you pretty much have to get a loan, right? Things are expensive. And I'm not going to sit up here and say that borrowing's not okay. We've got a house loan. So, and I think a lot of people in here, if you own a house, you probably don't really own it outright. But you have a loan, or you have a car payment, or you have education expenses that you had to take loans out for. And for me, I'm going to say that borrowing is okay, but I would challenge you that borrowing for a vacation or borrowing for Christmas or borrowing to upgrade your car that's perfectly fine, right? Those are the things that you might want to think twice about. Talk to your wife, talk to your husband, and say, hey, is that really the brightest thing we should be doing right now with our money? So, the last basic principle is keep good records, and it kind of goes along with the whole budget thing. Proverbs 24:3-4 says, by wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. So do you know how much you spend? And the way that we know is we have this budget, and it's got, I don't know, a couple of dozen different categories. So we know how much we spend on eating out. We know how much we spend on groceries. We know how much we spend on cat and dog food. We know how much we spend on football. So we're able to always go back and see, you know, what things are going up every year, what things are steady. And like I said, we'll look at it about once a year at the end of the year and say, okay, what needs to go up and what needs to go down? Do we need to make any changes in our budget so that we can continue to do the things that we think we need to be doing? So, do you know how much you spend, and do you know what you spend it on? So develop your plans together. But in our case, Julie is the one who actually executes the plan. So she's our bookkeeper. I used to get involved in it, but not anymore. I mean, she handles the bank accounts, and she, like I said, she pays me twice a month, right? So I get my allowance, and that's what I get my haircut with, and that's what I get to go out to lunch with. And if I want to do some race somewhere, that's what I use to sign up for a race. But she owns the budget. And if I need to modify the budget, then she and I talk about it, and then she does it. But develop plans together, but one of you keep the books. All right. Then we're on to family and the Combs.
All right, so I'm Jenny Combs. This is Kent Combs. We were married in 2004, so just 9 years of marriage next month. And we're going to talk about family. I'm going to start off talking about in-laws and extended family. And basically, when we talked about this, this came down to a balance between honor your father and mother with, you know, that is why, I got those backwards. So honor your father and mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, Deuteronomy 5:6. Versus the leave and cleave verse. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife and they become one flesh. And, you know, anytime you're dealing with relationships, it's always a tough balance to figure this out. So I read an article on familylife.com. It's by Don and Sally Meredith called Two Becoming One. This is where I got kind of a lot of my information. In the leave and cleave verse, the word leave really means like abandon or break off completely, which sounds pretty harsh. And I don't think any of us, you know, in most cases, you know, totally abandon all communication. But basically, it's just trying to express that your relationship with your parents have changed when you get married. And your family unit, the person you depend on, becomes your spouse as opposed to your parents. And then in honor thy father and mother, honor means, you know, to value at a high price and to have deep respect. And so in that, you know, our parents are still our parents. We still love them. And they have a lot of valuable advice to give us. And so that's where we need to find the balance between those two things. And this relationship with our in-laws is always a dynamic relationship. I have a really great relationship with Kent's mom. Before we got married, she and I would go out to dinner all the time, and Kent was out of town, and he was really worried about that we were becoming too close. And I guess I kind of always thought that how your relationship starts off with your in-laws is how it will always be. So I thought, you know, she and I would always be close. And we're still close, but, you know, since then, things in our relationship have changed, you know, and there are times that she does things that annoy me. I'm sure there are times that I do things that annoy her. Or I thought that, you know, if you had a bad relationship with your in-laws, you always had a bad relationship with your in-laws and nothing would make it better. But things change. Even in just 9 years of marriage, things have changed so much for us. When we first got married, we lived in Utah and our families were in Kentucky. We used to joke that our advice to people getting married is to move 1,600 miles from anyone you know, because that created a dependence for us on each other. We had our own holiday traditions. We had our own, just everything we did, you know, became about each other. And I think it's really strengthened our marriage a lot. But then a few years later, we moved back to Kentucky and our parents were right there in town, could drop by anytime. And we had kids and they could drop by anytime. And so that relationship again changed. And we've been through sickness, we've been through death of a parent, and that has all just affected our whole relationship as well as our relationship with our families as well as our relationship. So just a few of the things that I was reading about, a few of the main points I came up with on in-laws. Number one is to maintain privacy. Don't run to mom and dad every time, you know, he does something that has made you mad because, yeah, yeah. And and you're creating a perception to your parents of what your spouse is like, and they get that in their head. And, you know, it's hard to change those initial perceptions. You know, especially sometimes we tend to complain about things and not always tell the good things that that our spouses do for us. We forget to tell our parents about that. And so they get an idea of their head about what your spouse is like on a daily basis. And that creates a bad relationship between your spouse and your parents. The second thing was to respect everyone's feelings. Remember that when you get married, you're marrying your spouse, but you're also marrying into their family. And you take all the baggage that comes with that, the good and the bad. You know, that that your spouse is their child. And now that I've had kids, I understand this a lot better. You know, my kids will always be my babies. And I realize now that, you know, for his mom, he will always be her little baby. And we have to respect that and respect the wisdom that our in-laws and our parents can give us. But at the same time, we also have to respect the feelings of our spouse. You know, what message does it send to Kent if every time I needed something fixed in my house, I went to my dad first rather than going to him to take care of it? You know, it sends him the message that you're not good enough to take care of me, and it's part of that respect that is so important to men. You know, if Kent called me from work and said, I'm going to go to my mom's house and have dinner tonight, that doesn't send a good message to me about that he values what I do for our family and values, you know, the role that I have in our family. And the third thing is to have a plan to deal with your in-laws and to deal with crises and conflicts. I have a good friend that when she got married, she is very close to her family, has always lived in town with her family. Her mom and her sister are her best friends, and they tell each other everything. When she married her husband, he had lived hundreds of miles away from his family for probably 5-10 years. So he wasn't used to having family close by. And so they were always at her parents' house, always making plans, always having dinner, and they had to set up a rule that they didn't make plans until they talked to each other. So, you know, typical scenario, you're having dinner with your parents, and they say, oh, well, next week we're going to go do this. Do you all want to go? For their child, it makes sense to just say, oh, yeah, that sounds like fun. Let's go. And the husband may be sitting there going, that does not sound like fun to me, and I do not want to spend any more time with your parents this week. And so they had to just learn to say, well, we'll talk about it and we'll let you know. And I think that's a good rule for family, for friends, for anything, that, you know, you don't commit your spouse to do something just because you want to do it or without talking to them. And it keeps from having hurt feelings when the spouse has to later on say, yeah, I don't want to do that, you know, or say in front of the parents, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to spend that time with you this week, that, you know, again, keeping respecting feelings and just kind of keeping that in check. And that also goes with holidays. I think that's probably one of the first conflicts, even in dating, that we go through is, who are we going to spend the holidays with? You know, what are we going to do? And so I think when you talk first, you have a plan about everything, then that makes everything go much easier. So Kent's going to talk about the other side of this with the kids.
Yep. So given the general ruckus upstairs, families grow. So most of us, when we got married, thought things couldn't get any more interesting, and then one of these shows up and things get a lot more interesting. So that's my lovely daughter, who is now 3, but at one point she was that age and screaming. So kids are a blessing, and thankfully the Bible tells us that, because there are days where we might not feel very blessed. So there are days where we can go and we can look up some of these verses that talk about blessing. And I found these when I looked up, you know, kids as a blessing in the Bible. And then there might be some more days where the stuff is really flying around literally and figuratively, and so we need some more verses to go to. And then maybe your 12-year-old son gets caught vandalizing the neighbor and he gets picked up by the cops. And you might need some more verses to let you know that, yes, kids are a blessing. But the big thing when we're talking about marriage, kids shows up, things change. Things change, obviously, in terms of your family and all that, but things definitely change in your marriage, because now it's not just the two of you, so you've moved from being just by yourself to now you're responsible for yourself and another person, and now collectively you're both responsible for this thing, this little thing that's come into your world and it's now taking up your sleep and your time. The big thing that we kind of wanted to hit on here is what we found in our marriage, and it kind of gets back to what you were saying about the do-nothing, right? But the things that I would do before we had kids to try to show Jenny that I loved her and appreciated her and that kind of thing changed dramatically. So I can tell you right now, we've got a one-year-old and a three-year-old. Roses are not high on the list. They're appreciated, but I've learned that after kids, coming home with 12 dozen roses, or 12 dozen, a dozen roses and being like, oh, hey, I love you, doesn't speak as much as what I do when I come home where I grab both kids and leave her alone and just give her at least a couple moments of quiet. But that is the thing that I know I can do to show her that I appreciate her. And that gets into the communication thing. As you go through your marriage, after you had kids, being sure that you're communicating, kind of what Casey was talking about, that, hey, what is it that you're needing now? What are the things that I can do for you to serve you and to show you that I appreciate you and to keep this marriage going on? So kids change things quite a bit, and you've got to make sure that you're keeping those communication lines open. So as things change, as you find out that, hey, honey, roses, yay, but really I could just handle some quiet, that I'm sure that I'm hearing that and understanding that the priorities have changed. Roses are still good, yes. I'm not saying roses are bad. I'm saying that grabbing two kids and putting them in bear hugs, yeah, is also very nice. So today we wanted to kind of wrap up with some very basic stuff for marriage in general. And we'll wrap it up, but so some practical stuff. So there are a lot of good books. So these are, if you're married, if you're thinking about getting married, if you've been married, this is just a sample of some books in our group that we've read before and have been nice. We've learned some stuff. There's a ton more out there if you want to know what those are. We can share them with you. But the big thing I think we've learned with these books is it's not so much the material in the book. It's not like we both just took a book, went off, read, came back and said, oh, that was good. It's that dialogue. It's the thing that kind of gets you talking. So we can read a book together, and that sparks some conversation that kind of helps us understand where each other's coming from, gets that communication going. The other thing that we wanted to share, and this is kind of, we realized this as we agreed to talk as a group, this whole marriage thing isn't easy. And I think probably most of us could attest to that. We've either experienced something in our own lives or in the lives of our family, that, like, this isn't easy. Our failure rate's pretty high. That's why Jesus didn't get married. Oh, wait. And when we try to do it like the Bible tells us to do it, like the verse that Ben showed earlier, when we try to do it that way, it's impossible. But God didn't call us to do this in a vacuum. So that's kind of why we're all here on a Sunday morning. This is why we've got the body of Christ. That's why we've got a relationship with Jesus, that we're not supposed to be doing this in a vacuum. And so I guess I'm encouraging you, and I'm putting ourselves out here. So you've seen four couples kind of get up here and speak. If everything's going fine, you just want to discuss what's right to do in marriage and how to do things well, then please grab one of us. If you've got questions, if you're thinking about getting married or you've in marriage and you've kind of got a question on how to do things, we're here to, we're kind of stepping up and saying, come talk to us. Again, some of us haven't been married that long, but collectively we've got 47 years. And the other thing we wanted to talk about was, so we are on retainer. Is that the right word? Sure. If you are in a situation and you feel like there are some really big issues going on here, and you come to one of us, or you don't feel comfortable coming to one of us, we do have somebody that you can get in touch with that's a professional counselor that can actually help. So if you are really getting to the point where the divorce word's being thrown around and you are feeling like, hey, this is a very real possibility at this point, I strongly encourage you, grab one of us, and if it's out of our league, we will get you in touch with somebody that can help you and sit down and talk about your issues. So talking about the communication part of it, this is another resource that we're going to be doing. So you've heard something about these retreats and this kind of thing. So this is a retreat that's coming up in April. It's going to be up in Indianapolis. It's called the Weekend to Remember. Jenny and I did this. You're married 2 years. And it's a conference over 3 days. You get away for two nights. And again, really what this does, they have a lot of really good material, but really what it does is it gets you out of your lives. It gets you away from your job. It gets you away from your kids. And you get to spend some time just talking about your marriage and each other. And so it's very, very good for that. So kind of some specifics. We had some handouts. Somebody forgot them. Yep. This is at the end of April. It's up in Indianapolis. The cost of the conference is $150. However, if you want to go, the church will cover that. So we will cover the conference costs if you want to go to this conference. However, it is strongly encouraged that you actually go and stay in a hotel up there to get away. So just kind of leave everything behind and actually have some time to focus. So your hotel and your food will actually be on you. The big thing is, make sure if you decide to just commute, go up there and come back, make sure you're leaving the kids somewhere. This is supposed to be a time where you can focus on your spouse, your marriage, open up those lines of communications, and make sure you're talking about how you're doing. So the caveats with this, though, if for whatever reason, a hotel or commuting even, or your food, if there's going to be a financial barrier to you doing this, let us know, and we'll try to get something worked out. We'll also say that if childcare is an issue, come see us. We don't have a plan, but if we need to try to figure out a plan, we'll try to figure out a plan. Because, again, this is just another tool that we have that helps us say, as a church, that we believe God thinks that healthy marriages are important, that people that are deciding to get married or are married, keeping those relationships strong is an important thing. So, you guys, so obviously we've got a mixed crowd here. We got people that are married. I assume we got some people that are dating. We got some single people. And the big punchline is, why do we talk about this in this forum? And it's because we're all in this together. So as TLR, as the body of Christ, we need people that have been married a really long time. We need people that are newlyweds. We need people that can tell us how things go wrong and kind of help us, warn us about those issues. We need people that are dating to seek advice from people that are married and tell them what works, what doesn't. And so I guess we understand that marriages are important. We want to do well at them. But we need to have the whole group involved and be able to do that. So does anybody have any questions or comments to wrap up? We're a couple minutes over. Yep. If you need the kids, go get the kids. Or you guys could focus on your marriage and just leave it up there. Yes.
So
yep. Okay. Well, I'm going to pray for us real quick. And remember, yeah, Casey's going to pass these out, so this is a nice tool that they found. Yep. So, again, thank you guys for coming today. We'll pray real quick and then be dismissed. But I thank you guys for the conversation and for being here this morning. Father God, thank you so much for today. I thank you for the topic. I thank you for marriage and the way that you've set it up. I thank you for everybody that you've brought here, married, single, whatever. I do pray that as a body of believers that we would do what we need to do to make sure our marriages stay strong and that us individually are doing what we need to communicate with and support our spouses. So give us a good day and pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Thank you, guys.